David Spinoptorp here with Ross Dunbar for this week's edition of the Tribuna podcast. Man, Ross, we have a lot to talk about because we're covering two match days, but I think the biggest match that everybody wants to know about is the match that happened last night between Bayern and Leipzig. Of course, Bayern scored three goals in the first half. Leipzig seemed to fall apart. But Bayern, being the big dogs that they are, they faced the school kids on the block and they handled them pretty easily. So my question for you is, this result seemed pretty surprising, but I don't think it was that surprising, was it?
Yeah, I think some of us fell into the trap of Leipzig being able to beat Bayern. What was your prediction out of interest?
Actually, I didn't have one. I think I pegged a 2-1 Bayern win. I think that was another one of those conservative ones, and would have not have guessed this.
I did 2-1 to Leipzig. And yeah, it was nothing like that as I expected, to be honest. For all we've criticised Bayern this year under Ancelotti, they didn't half save their best performance of the year by a country mile for the first half of that game. They were phenomenal. I mean, I think, I don't really know where to start. I mean,
well, let me give you a starting point, because I think that
it's not going to be Matt Simons' hair, is it?
No, well, that is going to be
that's another podcast.
I mean, I thought that was Ellen DeGeneres at first, but but I'm curious what you think of Douglas Costa, because Douglas Costa came in against Darmstadt. Scored the only goal of that game, and now in the biggest game probably of Bayern's season, Ancelotti says, you know what, I'm going to start him again, and put him opposite Robin, and then when Robin has to come off, I'm going to bring up Ribery. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge vote of confidence from the manager, isn't it?
Yeah, he was phenomenal in that game against Darmstadt, and he basically won the game himself with that goal. Costa's a really strange player because he can do things that not many other players can, but there's times where maybe he is so ineffective with his crossing. But in that game on Wednesday, he was just fantastic. Interesting that the guy to fall out was Thomas Müller.
Yeah.
And you know my thoughts on Thomas Müller, and I don't really want to get into that again, but I think Ancelotti deserves a lot of credit. Interesting that the difference in the reaction between Guardiola dropping Müller and Ancelotti dropping Müller, but it's just the same reason, right? I mean, although he's a great player, he's not a guy who can really impact a game through his technique and his individual qualities. He's a guy who relies on other players to create chances for him.
Well, let's put this a little bit more context, because I mean, Thomas Müller had scored one goal in the Bundesliga. I mean, that was a little bit more of a defensible position for Ancelotti, because the guy wasn't scoring. But last year he was scoring.
In 2016 he was bad as well, like in the first half and during the Euros.
Yeah. So, but I think honestly, I think that you make a great point, that the fact that Thomas Müller was dropped may have been a little bit shocking, but it wasn't surprising to anybody. And I think that says everything you need to know about Thomas Müller's season.
Especially the way that Leipzig play as well. I mean, they're so compact. If Thomas Müller is a space investigator, or whatever that term is meant to be, then there's not really much space to occupy. You need guys who can create space themselves. And you're not going to drop Arjen Robben, because Arjen Robben statistically is like one of the best attackers in the Bundesliga still. So you have to make a decision between Costa, Ribery, and Müller. And Costa gives you everything, basically. Energy, gives you pace, it gives you combination play, it just gives you everything. And yeah, I think you'd be hard pushed to find many better players in that Bayern team on Wednesday than Costa.
Now let's go into this question, because now we're at the end of the first half. In regards to Thomas Müller, scored one goal in the first 16 games. Has sat a lot of Bundesliga games, has success in other competitions. Is this just a bad season, or is this now starting to become a trend?
Well, you're probably asking the wrong person, because like I said, I have my views on Thomas Müller, and I'm not saying he's not a good player. He's a great player, but he's just a different type of player, right? I mean, when Thomas Müller was really, really good, he was playing off the front. Right, I mean, his best football was under Louis van Gaal at the start, when he was playing off Mandzukic and Mario Gomez. He could combine with the players, he could run beyond them, he could, you know, get the knockdowns. That was the type of player he is. He's not a right winger, and I think Jogi Löw found out at the European Championships that he's not a guy that you can rely on to control games, to play that killer pass. I think for Bayern's long-term development, I think it's the right decision to leave him out of the team for these big games. Don't get me wrong, he can come in so-called big games against Mönchengladbach and Leverkusen and Schalke and still do a good job, but I don't think he's part of Bayern's strongest team.
I don't think he's part of Ancelotti's... No. I wouldn't say he's part of isn't part of Bayern's best team, because I think when there was a game before the one that he scored where he was playing in the middle, in behind Lewandowski with Robin on one side and Ribery on the other, and it looked like we were back in 2013. Ancelotti, I think, has figured out that Thomas Müller is very versatile, but he's not versatile in the way that he thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he figured out pretty quickly that he wasn't a winger. And even though he still tried to play him there, I think he tried to get him to do different things on the wing rather than having him play as a winger. I think that he's figuring out that he's better in behind or as a striker. But keep in mind that with Real Madrid, and when he won the Champions League with Real Madrid, they were playing 4-4-2. So Bayern could very conceivably play 4-4-2, and that would mean that Thomas Müller would be the most effective player for that system. I think that now he's trying to move towards... He wants to keep that three-man midfield, and you can't have a three-man midfield with Thomas Müller on the field. And I think that's the biggest thing that has been the season. He's played with a three-man midfield for most of the season, so Thomas Müller has ended up either not playing a position that he's not good at or on the bench. And I think that's why he's struggled. But maybe Ancelotti's just not the right coach for Thomas Müller. And that could definitely be the case.
Yeah, it could be. It's a good point. Touching on the midfield three, though, I mean, one of the surprising selection calls was to bring Xabi Alonso in.
Yes.
How do you think he played?
I think Xabi Alonso, he's gotten a bad rap this season, but when he plays with Vidal, it depends on who he plays with. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that. I mean, when Kimmich is in midfield, I don't think that's a very good combination.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I mean, Alonso and Vidal played a lot together last year, and Pep Guardiola eventually dropped Alonso when he wanted Vidal and Thiago to play together. But I think that Alonso is still useful, and I think that's just because he may not be able to do things well, if he's put in the right situation, he's still a very, very useful player. And that's not just because he scored yesterday. I mean, I think that the way that he was basically doing what Julian Weigl does, which is he took a lot of defenders out of the game yesterday. And maybe not all of his passes were on point, but he did when he connected with whether it was Costa or somebody, he took a lot of... To me, from what I saw, he took a lot of players out of the game. And then Vidal could be the one that was roaming around and helping out. So I think... But then again, this is kind of a very tangential way of saying this, but if you have Xabi Alonso on the field, can you play Thomas Müller on the field at the same time? Or does Xabi Alonso pay better in a midfield three and Thomas Müller plays better when there's only two holding midfielders? So I think there's this balance that Ancelotti is still trying to figure out. And I think that his selection was very brave to bring in Ancelotti in that game.
Yeah, it was. It certainly paid off. It was interesting to read some of the analysis, actually, from René Maric from Spielverlagerung. And he was talking about how the Leipzig players were not cutting off the passing lanes for Alonso, even though they were pressing really high. There was times when maybe the second striker wouldn't shift across in time, so that meant that Alonso had the space to play those kind of long diagonal balls. It's very surprising, because I actually thought that Leipzig would have targeted Alonso.
Yeah, me too.
Especially even given that they started Naby Keita, which we can talk about a little bit later, but I thought, especially given how intense they can press, I thought Alonso was the target, because if you press him, you take him out of the game. Now that means that you either have to build with Hummels, or you have to build with Martinez. But then if your two strikers are closing all the options, Hummels is only going to have to play long, which would suit Leipzig in theory, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I agree with you completely. Alonso gets a lot of stick, which I think is really unfair. I mean, he's old and he's slow.
He's old and slow.
And I totally understand that. But
and goes to ground more than he probably should.
Like, strategically, he can be such an important player because I don't think there's a lot of players in the Bundesliga. If you give him the ball on the other side of the pitch, he will find you on the other side like that. No problem. Like, he's so accurate with his passing and he can scan the pitch so well that even if you do press him, he knows what's happening. The guy's played the game for years. He knows that if you're pressing him, he finds the little yard of space to make it work. And I think, like, I agree with you. I think Ancelotti, for all the criticisms that he's had this year, I think he deserves massive credit for bringing Alonso into the team.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is a result I think a lot of people were surprised in the way that it happened. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but I think a lot of people, I mean, it was a surprising result. Would this have been a surprising result under Pep Guardiola?
No, don't think so. I think you're right. I think that's such a good point that you make, actually, because I think we've been kind of almost misled by how Ancelotti's teams have played so far, because, to be honest, it's been pretty kind of pedestrian for most of the season. It's like they've been in first gear all the way through. Now, that could be a reflection on everyone else in the Bundesliga, that Bayern don't even have to play in second gear. But there's been times, I think, when teams have punished them, right? I mean, Dortmund, Hoffenheim, Frankfurt, Cologne, Leverkusen were really unlucky not to take something out of that game. So in the big games, they have looked a little bit slow, and not really with any kind of rhythm. And you can make many arguments to that. I think the big difference is that Guardiola's eyes for the really small detail is really different to Ancelotti. I'm not sure Ancelotti himself, I mean, I think it's important to mention that he has a huge team of people around him. I'm sure the performance analysis, I'm sure the TV, the video guys will be pointing out all these small things, but Guardiola himself was doing that. And I'm not sure Ancelotti at 60, however many years old he is, would be doing that kind of thing. And maybe that's why Bayern have maybe looked like they've been playing without the small details. That's my take on it.
But, like I said,
although they've dropped points in all these games, the record this season is still phenomenal. I mean,
because the reason why I brought this up is because Pep Guardiola is obviously a very, very high stature. Mm-hmm. But Ancelotti, of course, has an as good, if not in some respects, better reputation than Pep Guardiola. And I think that the fact that some of us have almost lost trust in Carlo Ancelotti and his ability to actually get his team up for these big games. Yeah. And then when he faces a big game like this, I mean, Bayern looked like, I mean, they looked like the world-class team, and Leipzig were the ones, even though they've looked prepared for most of the season, they looked completely unprepared. Mm. And And Ancelotti is still one of the only few coaches that when an up-and-coming team like Leipzig comes to their ground, that he can basically say to his team, you know what, let's get these guys, let's get them out and make sure that we're the ones that are on top and not them.
I think Ancelotti is a man of small words. I don't think
I don't think
he would have had to get Bayern up for that game.
Maybe that's true too. I mean, I think
when you got guys like Lewandowski, Robin, Xabi Alonso, Hummels, who have been doing this for years, I think they'll have seen a lot of the press coverage around Leipzig, and they would have thought, there's no way on earth are they coming here and winning this game.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, football's a game of fine margins, and you mentioned there that Leipzig looked quite unprepared. That's how it appears, but I'm not sure I don't know if we want to kind of move on to Leipzig.
Let's get into Leipzig now, because I think, I'm almost speechless, because they've looked so arrogant, and they've looked so like even though they're the new kids on the block, they're the kids on the playgrounds. It's their playground now. It doesn't belong to any of these traditional clubs anymore. And then they have this opportunity to make a real statement, and for once this entire season they actually looked like one of the youngest teams in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I don't really know where they went wrong. I mean, I've seen people saying that, oh, they're too inexperienced. I'm not sure I buy that.
Were they too inexperienced when they faced Dortmund in the third week of the season?
They've looked tactically so good through the whole season. And playing Bayern away is different from playing Dortmund at home or Mönchengladbach or Schalke or Leverkusen, but these are still Champions League teams, right? So I don't think you can label them inexperienced. Don't get me wrong, I think their game management was poor, which Forsberg's tackle, for example, was so stupid.
Yes.
I mean, like...
What? Yeah.
It wasn't intentional to stud Lam in the back of a heel, but he didn't have to make that tackle. All he could have done was pull his jersey or clip his heels, and it's fine.
I was considering that Forsberg is Leipzig's captain. I think that everybody...
No, Willy Orban is captain.
Or Willy Orban is
most
the captain.
Important player.
But Forsberg is... I mean, he's been there... Willy Orban and Forsberg has been part of this project for a long time. Yeah. And I think that was really surprising to see Forsberg
take I think that was a case of game management. Like, I mean, I know that I'm not saying that he's inexperienced because this guy's a Swedish international... You know, and he plays...
He's one of the oldest players
on the
team.
He's 25 years old. I mean, he's got huge experience, but his experience is different. I mean, through the second division and, you know, coming into this season, he wasn't making these kind of big decisions. He wasn't required to make professional fouls and stuff like that, because that's just not the type of game that Leipzig were in. This is one game where they're up against the cosh. You need him to be a little bit savvier than that. And I saw after the game that Ralf Rangnick was not happy with that tackle, because that basically killed the game.
Yeah.
I mean, he had it 2-0. He did it 2-0. I mean,
he still had a chance.
Yeah,
of course.
He still had a huge chance to come back and get something out of the game, but it was such a stupid decision. And then when you're a man down, it's game over.
You know, one thing that I think the biggest indicator of the game was when Ralf Hasenhüttl brought on Dominik Kaiser at halftime. Because Kaiser, we were talking about these guys that have been part of this project. I mean, Kaiser, I think, was with the team back when they were in the early divisions, you know? This is a guy that is kind of the heart and soul of this project, you know? And the fact that Hasenhüttl felt that he needed to take off his most talented midfielder, Naby Keita, because he looked completely out of sorts. And basically looked like he was his composure was completely gone. The fact that he was the first person off the bench says everything you need to know about Leipzig's performance. That it was just, I think the game was they were looked out of their depth, and they definitely did. And even though I still think that Poulsen is one of the most underappreciated strikers in the Bundesliga, I still think that even he was starting to lose a little bit of his composure, basically the way the ball was bouncing, and that is the biggest sign that maybe, just maybe, that they're not ready to be champions yet.
But I mean, they're probably not ready. Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I don't think they're really taking that into consideration. I think they are. They've thrown so much money into this over the last few years. Net spend over the last 3 years, transfers, is 80 million euros.
Yeah.
So they've spent enough money. Some of the players that they've signed are nowhere to be found. Damari, Bruno, guys like that, who cost like 15 million combined.
Yeah.
But I totally buy into the idea that it's hard to make the step up.
Yeah.
Another gear, right? I mean, Leipzig have progressed so much over the last 2 years.
Exactly.
They've gone from mid-table Zweite Bundesliga. They've gone from the Dritte Liga to mid-table Zweite Bundesliga for 2 years, and then promoted, and then into the Bundesliga. It's hard to shift the gears up so many times for an individual player. So now, what I'll ask you is...
Well, don't get me wrong. I think Hasenhüttl has done a fantastic job.
Of course.
Job.
Oh, yeah.
What they're doing, what they've done coming into this game, I mean, has been tremendous. It's not necessarily a bad thing that they're not ready to be champions yet. I think next year, after having a year in the Bundesliga, they're going to be title contenders. And I think that they're definitely deserve to be. I just think that, I mean, if you look at this game, we talked about this off air. Five of the five times that Leipzig have dropped points, four of them have been away from home. Mm-hmm. In the second half of the season, they're going to have to go to Dortmund. They're going to have to go to Schalke. They're going to have to go... They're going to have to go to Mönchengladbach. And even though we're going to get to their coach in a minute, even though the coaching situation's in flux, I mean, these are still, for any team, for Bayern Munich, these are tough grounds to go to.
Yeah.
And if they lose their composure almost this quickly in a game against Bayern, mm-hmm. they could foreseeably drop back from the pack rather quickly if they're not too careful.
Interesting. Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I think January, because the break is so long in January, it's so difficult to predict what's going to happen in the second half of the season.
For sure.
We saw Hertha last year have their best first half of the season ever, and then like one of their worst second half of the season ever. It was so bizarre. And it, to be honest, it wouldn't surprise me if one of those kind of top teams had the same problem. But what I was going to ask you was... I know that Red Bull have already invested a lot of money.
Yeah.
But do they have to invest more to be as good as Bayern? Is this idea or this kind of novel perspective that you can sign guys who are not fully developed and make them into Bundesliga winners, is that actually
possible? I don't think it's an if, actually. I think they will. Honestly, I understand
your
question.
You think they will buy players?
I think they absolutely will. Considering they seem to have found the right coach... They seem to have at least some semblance of a system, and you can see what I mean. David Selke, who is one of the best players in the Olympics, he came off the bench. So obviously, Hasenhüttl knows that how when they bring players in, he knows how the right time to put them on the field and to put them in the best situation to succeed. I mean, going out and buying Timo Werner was a quote unquote minor acquisition over the summer. You know, if Leipzig have this confidence now to when they buy players that their coach is going to find the best situation for them to succeed. So that's why I say it's not going to be an if they're going to sign players. I wouldn't be surprised if they made a decent, maybe not a huge splash, but a decent splash in the winter. In the transfer window, and next summer, I wouldn't be surprised if they spent more money than Bayern did.
I think especially. I mean, right now with them 3 points off the top, I would expect them to qualify for the Champions League.
Yeah.
Now, the big question mark then is, would they be able to sign more players and still adhere to financial fair play? Now, financial fair play is a complete shambles, right? But the rules are still there. Now, does 100 million of sponsorship from Red Bull count as legit?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. So they're going to have to bear that in mind, because they've made a loss this summer of 20 million euros or 25 million euros in signings. They're not going to be able to sustain that level of spending without qualifying for the Champions League and upping their revenue stream. So it's a kind of, it's a balance there. To get those high-quality players that you're talking about, they have to qualify for the Champions League.
But let me tell you this, too. I mean, would it be entirely surprising if a team from England wanted to inquire about Timo Werner?
I think that's inevitable, yeah.
And of course, that's inevitable. But is that a player that Leipzig can probably let go if they want to adhere to financial fair play?
They could.
I mean, I'm not saying...
Keita's a good example. I think Keita will go to... Man City or Arsenal or PSG or something like that. They will go to the top.
And I think Leipzig know that. And I think they know that if they want to adhere to that financial fair play, they're going to have to part with these players already.
Yeah.
But that's why Hasenhüttl is keeping someone like David Selke in reserve.
True.
Because he's not trying to put a player in that's...
Yeah.
And Leipzig are probably really happy about that, because they can say, all right, Timo Werner, you want to go to England? Go ahead to England. I think we're very confident in David Selke that he's going to take your place, and we're not going to skip a beat.
Mm.
So
it's a tough balance for Leipzig, because they're trying to accelerate this growth so quickly that at some point there's going to be a barrier, i.e. if they lose Keita or Werner in the summer. Can they replace those players quickly enough to be ready to play in the Champions League?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. But the jury's out.
Jury's out. So we know Hasenhüttl is a great coach, and we found out this week too that Andreas Schubert is not as good of a coach as Ralf Hasenhüttl, because he lost his job. He's the seventh manager to lose his job this season. And actually, one thing that I found interesting is that if you look at the table, the bottom seven teams have all fired their coaches.
Oh, really? Wow.
So
the Bundesliga being a Augsburg, great model again for management. Yeah,
exactly. So from Augsburg to Ingolstadt, they've all let go of their coaches, but obviously wow. Andre Schubert's the latest one. I'm actually kind of sad that he didn't figure it out, because I think that we were very impressed with his tactical ideas. I think he made a lot of bold decisions, but ultimately, obviously, when you're losing, if you're falling towards the relegation zone after making the Champions League, if you're Max Eberl, you have to make a move.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, I would kind of second that notion that Schubert had some very interesting ideas on the game. He was trying to implement something similar to Guardiola in terms of positional play, but I'm not sure Gladbach necessarily had the quality of players to make that happen. And the players that they signed, Kramer, Hoffman, a lot of poor deals. And
Strobel.
I am actually here as hot take for Tribune Podcast.
Yes.
I am changing my opinion on Max Eberl. I think he's maybe not as good as we give him credit for. Because some of the signings that Gladbach have made in the last 12 months especially have been really poor. Really poor. And I was talking to someone a few weeks ago who shared the same opinion, that if you look at the signings and the deals that they've made, very, very weird. I mean, they don't fit with the manager's style of play. I mean, Schubert wants possession, and you sign Christoph Kramer.
Yeah.
He's not a possession player.
No.
Jonas Hoffman's not a possession player. Josip Drinic is not a possession player.
Yeah.
So I think the club has to look at the kind of management strategy and how they've actually been active in the transfer market, because I don't think they've been so effective. With Schubert, though, unfortunately, his away record was just appalling.
Yeah.
I mean, they had one away win, I think, in 17. One clean sheet away from home since the start of last season.
Yeah.
One game. Unbelievable. That's like one game out of maybe 50 they've had a clean sheet, and it was the last game of the season at Darmstadt. It was horrendous. I mean, don't get me wrong, there were signs of Gladbach going places. The Champions League, for example, the performance last year under Schubert in the last four games was really, really good, and they were unlucky not to get something out of that. This year, they were in a really difficult group, and again, they were so close to getting second place. So you have to give them credit for that. However, I think this away record was just not sustainable. I mean, Gladbach are 3 points out of the relegation positions right now. If they don't qualify for the Champions League or the Europa League, that's a bit of a concern. I mean,
well, if you also look, I mean, you see Raphael and Torgan Hazard get hurt. Basically, the two players that he almost built his attack around, and then all of a sudden they're gone. Andre Hahn has to play up by himself because he doesn't have anybody else to play next to him. Lars Stindl takes a big step back because he's not combining with Raphael anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of after those two injuries, the dominoes kind of just kept falling. I mean, their goal concession record, I don't think it was something new. I mean, I think it was, I mean, as shocking as and appalling as it is, I think that it wasn't a new revelation. I mean, ever since Martin Stranzl retired, they've even struggled with his injuries before he retired. They were having really serious defensive issues, even under Lucien Favre.
It's been a huge change, because Favre's early time, when he came in and kept them up and got them initially into the Champions League, the defence was phenomenal. I mean, that was the whole kind of foundation of that team, was the back four. But to make such a huge transition from Favre to Schubert, and losing Martin Stranzl, and losing Alvaro Dominguez, and losing Havard Nordveit, you know, that's really hard. And I do have sympathy for him, but there comes a point where philosophy has to go out the window.
Yeah.
And you have to deal with what you have.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure they did that. Don't get me wrong, I would say that the transfers, above all else, were really, really poor.
What is Schubert's next step? Because I want to give you an outside of the box idea, but I don't think Schubert's going to do it. But I'm curious, what do you think his next step is going to be?
That's a good question. I think he's definitely going to stay in Germany.
Okay.
He doesn't seem like a guy who likes the spotlight, from what I sense.
Okay.
his track record as a coach isn't great, but I still think he'll get a good job maybe in the second division or lower Bundesliga. I mean, if Werder Bremen were to sack a coach in 6 months, that's the kind of job I could see him going into.
I saw they were showing highlights on Sky in Germany of Andre Schubert, and one of the hands that he was shaking was Pep Guardiola's. And I was then my mind kind of got racing. I know that Pep Guardiola probably has all of his assistants already and all of his staff. But if Pep Guardiola gave you a call and say, Andre Schubert, I like your ideas and I think that I could help you out here. If you're Andre Schubert, do you say no to becoming
Pep
Guardiola's assistant? Because keep in mind that Andre Schubert, before he was the coach of Gladbach, he was just their reserve coach.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't, it's not like he's someone like Jos Luhukay, who was basically was taking a reserve job just to try to rekindle his coaching career. He was trying to start his coaching career because he's not that old. He's 45 years old, which we think that's old now considering that Julian Nagelsmann is on the touchline. But I mean, 45 years old for a coach is not old at all.
No.
Now, I think the second division is probably where he's headed. I'm curious to see if there's a club down there would take him. I mean,
Karlsruhe are looking for a coach.
I was going to say Karlsruhe was one big of the club. Teams that I mean
it may be a good, I mean it may actually be better for him to, I mean I'm not saying that he's stuck in kind of one philosophy, but it might be better for him if he wants to implement that philosophy to go further down and build it from there. That may be the next step for him.
But I was just thinking, I mean, if he wants to perfect his craft, I mean there's no one better to work under, I think, than, I mean, maybe, I don't know, personality wise whether he's the greatest to work under, but I think that maybe that Andre Schubert could have that next take that next level by at least reading the philosophy of Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, agreed.
So now obviously the man who replaced him is giving Ross Dunbar a face like he just bit into a lemon, and that is Dieter Hecking, the former Wolfsburg coach who won a German Cup with Wolfsburg, was sacked by Wolfsburg earlier this season, and has signed a 3-year contract until 2019 with to take charge of Borussia Mönchengladbach. Your initial thoughts on this? What, I think its initial is kind of...
Strange.
Yeah.
I think Dieter Hecking has done really, really well to be where he was at Wolfsburg, because at Nuremberg he wasn't spectacular. Okay, at Wolfsburg he had some success with Kevin De Bruyne in the team and they got second place, got the cup, etc. But after that it fell apart completely. Now, I don't know if that's his fault, but I just found his ideas to be quite bland.
Yeah.
I didn't see much intricacy in the type of play that he was trying to develop. Gladbach, I mean, although they are 3 points above the relegation zone, they're a Champions League club. I still believe that German clubs limit themselves by not looking outside of Germany. This is a very German thing, that they're very focused on coaches who can speak German now. I know that's important. I totally understand that. But modern coaches can communicate across the board. Julian Nagelsmann was telling you once that he talks to his players sometimes in their own languages now. He's not fluent in Spanish or whatever, but he's conversational so that he can talk to people and make them feel comfortable. It's just a man management style of thing. So I don't buy this thing that coaches are always just coaching in German to players who don't understand it. Because if you, I mean, you know this as well, a lot of foreign players in Germany don't speak German either. They speak English.
A lot of foreign people in. Our people are naive when you go to a country in Europe.
Yeah.
Like you expect like when you see it, once you have someone from France and living in Germany, that they all are supposed to be, he's supposed to be able to speak perfect German. That's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
So
I just think they could have tried something a little bit different. And I don't know. I think for a club like Gladbach to get that competitive edge and to still be one of the top teams without having the same resources, revenue wise, they probably could have looked outside of the box. They maybe could have looked in the Netherlands. They could have looked in Belgium or whatever and brought in a coach. But again, that's for me. For maybe Max Eberl has had this in his mind for a while that he wanted Deita Hecking. But until Deita Hecking got the sack, I'd be very surprised if Gladbach were going to go after him. So it was a very, very late decision for Klaus Allofs to make that, oh, Deita Hecking is my number one choice. I just find that to be strange. I mean, I think at the end of last season, there had to have been a doubt in Ebro's mind about Schubert, right?
Yes. I think that there was a doubt even from the beginning to give Schubert more than one year. And I think that's why when he won his first five games, I think that's why it was so surprising that he got a contract extension. Yeah.
So at that point, he probably should have been looking for people to take the job in January just in case he was going to sack him at that point. And I don't think Deita Hecking would have been the number one choice because he was on a contract at Wolfsburg and nobody thought he was going to get the sack. So I think, again, it's another example of very poor management. And I don't know it's going to make that much of a difference. I can't see it. Yeah. Maybe they'll play a bit more defensively. They'll try and make sure they have some shutouts. And you might see them improve defensively in the second half of the season. But for me, I just think it's a very short-term appointment. But even though he has a contract 2019,
yeah,
I just find that to be quite odd, to be honest. That's my opinion on it.
I shared this morning that I thought that the biggest weird thing was that he got 3 years. That he got, mm-hmm. or basically he got until 2.5 seasons, you know. I think if he got in a season and a half, that would have made sense to me. Because, I mean, Schubert got a season and a half mm-hmm. after Gladbach were in crisis last year. But my question to you now is, do you think they could have done better than Deita Hecking? Do you think they could have found someone better? Of the names that you can come up with at the top of your head, was there one out there that you think would have been better for Gladbach than Deita Hecking?
You have to take time to think who the right guy is. What is the style of play that Gladbach are trying to develop? You have to have some kind of cohesion there throughout the whole organisation, right? I mean, if Max Eberl knows the style of football that he wants, and that's consistent, then you have to look for coaches who play that system so that you can bring them in.
Yeah.
But to go from Favre to Schubert to Hecking, it doesn't really look as if there's a great deal of planning there at that club.
I think the one from Favre to Schubert, I think that is kind
that
of
was forced. That was forced.
That was forced.
Yeah, it was forced. Yeah, you're right. I'm not sure. I just don't think it's a very imaginative appointment. He might do a good job, I don't know, but I think the evidence is that he's not a coach who probably should have walked into a job mentioning like that.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, Mainz was able to find Martin Schmidt after.
Is he a better coach than Bruno Labbadia?
I was wondering because I was thinking that too. I was if I was Max Eberl, mm-hmm. if I was in charge of Gladbach, you're at the bottom of the table, but really right now you're already out of the Champions League. Chances are you're not going to get back to the Champions League spot.
Maybe you have to win the Europa League.
You have to win the Europa League, even getting up to the Europa League spots, that's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So why would you give a manager 2.5 years when you really only need a manager for maybe even 6 months? And to me, Bruno Labbadia is a coach that you could have for 6 months. If he's listening, I didn't mean that as an insult. I mean, I think that, especially considering Bruno Labbadia's last job was Hamburg, which is a complete dumpster fire, and going to a team like Gladbach, which is now, I mean, it's not quite a dumpster fire, but the trash smells pretty bad. But it's to have someone who basically is better at man management than anything else, mm-hmm. trying to get these players up for these games to try to advance the season. And then basically then you can make, and once the 6 months is up, then you can go into the summer. Now I'm spelling all this out as if like this is the easiest thing in the world. I'm sure that there's a lot of things I'm leaving out, but I'm just saying that a short-term appointment like Bruno Labbadia would make so much more sense, because then you can extend your coaching search. Yeah. Maybe you can find somebody.
You have that flexibility.
Maybe you can find somebody in Switzerland or in Austria that is a coach that is maybe not as well known, but But is a coach that you could probably give a chance to, and they'll be able to, I mean, maybe someone like Josip Zimbauer, who used to coach at Hamburg. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what he's doing in Switzerland, but I bet you Gladbach knows better than I do. And maybe they can find out probably better than I do if they don't know. But someone like that is maybe in a lower league, or maybe in a league that we don't really know. Or maybe it's a coach that has been out for a while that is maybe considering coming back, you know. So just someone but I think this situation called for a caretaker manager, not like a completely new appointment. And I think that was the most confusing part about it for me.
Yeah. So, the benefit of having Blabadia or Vey on a 6-month contract was that you could extend it if you needed to, right? I mean, if they did well enough, you could give them the extension. I'm not sure. I don't really know what to say. I think it's just poor management.
Again, I'm not a sporting director, and I don't know any of the complexities. But to me, when I saw this, I was like, I had the exact same feeling as you. I said, why are you move? It's almost like laterally. Is at the best case scenario, it's laterally, but. In some ways, it could even be a step down, because you have a coach that wants to implement ideas, and there's another coach that basically has an idea and doesn't really have any ways to improve on that idea in Dieter Hecking. So that's I think that I know that some people have said that he made it in the Champions League quarterfinals. I don't consider beating Ghent a real accomplishment.
It's context, isn't it?
It's really context. Yeah, I think, so where do you think, with Dieter Hecking in charge, where do you think they're going to... are they going to go up, or are they going to continue
I agree with you. I think they'll be lateral. I think it will be maybe middle of the bottom half of the table. Not relegation, because I think Darmstadt and Ingolstadt will eventually get cut adrift. Mm. I think they'll be maybe 15th, 14th, something like that.
Now, here's the bigger question. Is Gladbach's run as a Champions League team now over, and they're going to need another 5 or 7 years to get back to that level?
Maybe not 5 or 7, but I think they're going to need 2 or 3 years to get back to the level of being a top six team. Definitely, yeah. Definitely. Okay. Shout from the Tribune.
Yes, let's
what
do
we
it.
Got? What have you got for us?
So I know that some of you have said that only I do it when I'm on, which I thought was very funny. I don't think Stefan likes to do it, but I like to do it. And if you guys don't like the segment, just let us know. But I think it's a nice way to end our podcasts every time. So what do you want to shout from the Tribune this week, Ross?
Ooh, I was hoping to start with you, because you already have your idea in your mind.
I can start.
Although I think we can make this a one-off United section of the shout from the Tribune.
Okay.
Because I have a Dortmund gripe as well.
Yeah, well, we can talk. Yeah, we'll do two Dortmund gripes.
Straight from the Zoot Tribune.
Yeah, straight from the Zoot Tribune. I think go for it.
Felix Paslak. Why is he not playing? I do not understand this. I cannot get my head around this. So far, Thomas Tuchel is complaining about rotations and whatnot. There's a guy there who, whenever he's played at right back, has been fantastic. He's been absolutely brilliant. And yet, he doesn't get a game ahead of Ginter at right back. This is very odd. Very, very strange. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I think I think most of us have jumped on, or pretty early on, the Felix Paslak at right back. Paslak at the right back bandwagon.
The Paslak train.
Yeah, exactly.
The hype train has left Pulisic station.
I was wondering,
and we're going to Paslak station.
I think I was wondering that a week ago, too. I mean, because he's a young player who obviously he needs to fix things defensively, and maybe that's the reason why that Tuchel has made the decision, which is why he's relying on Piszczek and Ginter rather than someone like Paslak. But at the same time, you can put one of those one of those guys in midfield. You can even put Piszczek as a part of a back three and have Paslak with a little bit less defensive pressure playing as a wing back, which is a system that Tuchel has used before. So I don't think I think you're right. I don't think there's much of an excuse as to why Paslak, who is mentioned in the same sentence as Christian Pulisic, as a player that's coming through Dortmund's ranks. Those are two players that came up together. I mean, they signed their professional contracts together. They're both like very quality prospects. Why Tuchel, who is already relying on teenagers, why does he doesn't give another one a chance?
Yeah, I mean, Dortmund are playing a back three quite a lot, and they're playing Piszczek or Ginter on the right side of that back three. So I understand that, but scrap the back three, man. It's not working. Get rid of the back three. Get back to the back four. Get Pasalak in there at right back, and not Eric Durm. Please, not Eric Durm at right back. I mean, I can defend Thomas Tuchel all day in this situation that Dortmund are in. But for me, that's an obvious one. Ginter's just not a right fullback. To play in that system where you need to be good in possession to get the ball, you know, through defensive lines, and Pasalak does that, but he also transitions well into defence. So far, anytime he's played, he's been good. And I don't understand why he's not involved. He just seems to have disappeared.
Yeah, well, 2017 is a new year, yeah, so maybe it'll be the year of the Pasalak at right back.
Over to you.
I was going to talk about Gonzalo Castro.
Yeah, you basically ranted before we came on air. Yes, I already know what's coming.
I think I got it out of my system, though. I mean, it just makes no sense to me why this guy makes such great runs into the six-yard box. And whenever the ball falls to him there, he just, like, completely... He completely loses his mind, and he just cannot put the ball in the back of the net. Gonzalo Castro should have more goals than he does this season. I think that he's that type of midfielder. He's the type that gets into the box, and he does that. I don't understand why. But I wanted to actually do a different shout now because since you did a Dortmund one, and I saw this tweet from our good friend Jonathan Harding, and he said that if Bayer Leverkusen are in crisis, then Schalke should be in crisis as well. Because, sure, they lost their first five games, and it's remarkable the way that they've made their way back to mid-table. But you see teams that have bad forms going into Christmas. Mm. Wolfsburg last year was the perfect example. I think they lost... They didn't lose their last four games, but they got 2 points in their last four games. Going into the winter break last season, and then they completely fell apart in 2017. Now, Marcus Weinzierl has put a lot of teenagers on the field in recent games, and I think that still has to do with a lot of injuries.
Forced.
Yeah, that's also forced. I think Timo Kehler, if I'm getting the name even right.
Timo Kehler.
He's playing as a defender. I mean, I know the name, but I don't think any... I bet you even Schalke fans didn't even know who he was until he's played four games this season. So I think that they're not completely out of the woods. I made this really stupid prediction a few weeks ago that they were going to make their way back to the Champions League.
But I don't think they'll be far off. I understand John's point, but they were absolutely conned out of two of the last four games, right? They got conned in Leipzig.
Yes, conned
in Leipzig. Totally conned. They got totally conned against Leverkusen with 10 men. They had 10 men, backs to the wall. The players were up for it. The fans were up for it. It was the first sign of unity at that club for so long. And they got totally shafted in the last minute. Good tackle. Referee gives a free kick and they score from the free kick. And that's it. Game over. So I have sympathy with Schalke because 12 games unbeaten was a phenomenal run of form. I think the changes that Weinzierl has made has been really effective. They've had some injuries in the last few weeks, granted. But again, Schalke has that foundation where they can bring young players in. I think against Freiburg on Saturday, which I would add the caveat that was probably their most disappointing performance because they weren't great against Freiburg, so I'd take that point.
Most disappointing performance since their five. I mean, those...
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the two asterisks there.
But yeah, seven of their starting 11 were academy graduates. It's impressive.
That's impressive, sure.
So I don't see where the crisis is. Where is the crisis right now?
Well, I think his point was if we're bashing Bayer Leverkusen for not being where they are. I mean, I think that we've kind of given Schalke we've kind of moved on from Schalke's crisis because they're no longer on the bottom of the table.
They are in crisis.
But I mean, maybe crisis isn't the right word. But
the prizes aren't handed out in January.
But of course, Schalke. But now it seems like Schalke should be able to compete with a team like Leverkusen. And if those two teams meet again, like Schalke should be able to. I think a lot of people would expect that Schalke would win that game, and I think that John was just trying to manage those expectations.
Oh, I think in terms of squad and ambitions, I think Leverkusen were expected to win. But even after going a man down after 4 minutes, Schalke were the better team, and we're really unlucky not to win that game. I mean, I was kind of like, I'm not saying I was like turning into a Schalke fan, but I was really right behind them because they were so backs to the wall, but they were really up for it. The fans were up for it. Everyone was behind the manager, and I think that's a good sign. Now, what I would say to Leverkusen is that Leverkusen, on the other hand, looked like a team that has got no cohesion at all. I think the manager has got no idea what his starting 11 is, right? If you look at the rotations that Roger Schmidt has made in his last 5 games, it's like 6 changes on Wednesday against Cologne, 5 changes on Saturday, 5 changes the week before, 5 changes the week before that. How do you maintain any kind of cohesion or structure if you keep changing the team all the time?
Well, I mean, Marcus Weinstein has done that a little bit too.
Because he's being forced to. Because he's had to rotate.
Yeah, but I also think that I think the biggest thing with the biggest point I wanted to make on Marcus Weinstein is that he clearly does not, without Koke in the team, which I think it was a shocking.
He got injured right away.
They're really thin, actually, at the fullback position. Mm. And I think that's the reason why he's decided to switch back to a back three.
Yeah.
And because I don't think he trusts any of his fullbacks. I don't think he trusts.
But Kolasinac, for example, has been excellent. Very good.
Sure.
At left wing back. But that's the security that you have when you but he has back to, three and then two wing backs because yeah. you can bring them back into a back five or you can push them up into a 3-4-3 or 3-5-2 and that's what they're doing. And it's working brilliantly. Now, the thing with Schalke, right, is I think they'll finish in the top six. Right? I think they'll finish in the top six. But I think, and I'm not sure this is public at all, but I think Schalke have got their eye on the Europa League because they are capable of winning that. Mm. They can win that tournament and get back into the Champions League.
Mm.
Now, as Dortmund found out last year when they lost to Liverpool, the margins are so fine in a knockout competition. They might win it, they might not, but Sevilla aren't in it, so someone else has to win it, so why not Schalke?
Yeah.
Right? And then if they want to qualify again for the Champions League, then that's probably going to be their easiest way in because I don't think Bayern aren't going to drop out. Leipzig probably aren't going to drop out. Dortmund might have enough to get there. And I think Hoffenheim will be fourth.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's going to be hard to work that one out. But I think, Mr. Harding, but Schalke are not in crisis.
Yeah. Well, we'll also give more of our revised top four predictions. In next week's podcast, we're going to do one after Christmas just to wrap up the first half of the season, even though the first half of the season isn't completely over yet. Thank you guys for listening to this first half of the season, by the way. I mean, this is a project that we decided to start doing in August, and I think we've gotten a decent amount of feedback, and we really, really appreciate it, all the things that you have to say. If you want to give us more feedback, feel free to rate us on iTunes. Obviously, we need more. The better reviews that we get, the higher we get on the rankings, and the more followers we get. So any feedback that you guys have for us was much appreciated. You can also check out our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page. And also, of course, follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast to know when the podcasts are coming out and you can even contribute to the show yourself. So for Ross Dunbar, thanks so much. You can follow us at Ross Dunbar 93. You can follow me at Davis_FanOptorp. And have a great holiday season.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Yep, Merry Christmas for those of you who celebrate. And thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.